Good.
So tonight we are going to discuss the second part of our series on taking care of our children on Shabbos. And taking care of children, I guess, explains why I was a bit late tonight. But you understand. Last week we spoke about issues relating to diapering mostly, and tonight I'd like to focus on issues relating to food preparation, which is another major topic that we all encounter when trying to care for our children on Shabbos. So actually, just to go a bit out of order, if you'll turn to the second side of the sheet, where we discuss warming bottles on Shabbos, right? So everyone knows that for some reason, babies do not like cold milk. Right? This is pretty standard. I never got a straight answer when I tried to ask them why they don't like cold milk, but the reality is that babies do not like cold milk. So you have to warm the bottle. Of course, that potentially raises questions of the Malacha of Bishul on Shabbos, because we're not allowed to cook, and you take the milk, and generally you are going to be cooking that milk up in order to heat it. So how do you go about warming a baby bottle on Shabbos? So without going into all of the details, because that could be a full month or two, but we know that in Hilchos Shabbos there are distinctions made, not only in Hilchos Shabbos, in Yoredeya, there are distinctions made between a Kli Rishon, a Kli Sheni, a Kli Shlishi, in terms of cooking, that the pot that was directly on the fire, that's a Kli Rishon. And you can't put anything in there. When the pot is on the fire, nothing goes in on Shabbos. Even when the pot is taken off of the fire, that's a Kli Rishon Shelo Agabe Ha'ish. That might not be a D'oraisa, the Ran quotes Yerushalmi, that's only D'rabbanan, but still, we don't put anything in a Kli Rishon Shelo Agabe Ha'ish. Nothing goes in. Technically, according to the Gemara, you're allowed to put ox meat in, no? But L'maisa, most of us don't cook ox meat that often, so it's not so practical. I pour from that pot off the fire. I pour it into a second pot. That is called a Kli Sheni. Kli Sheni, according to the Gemara, you could put almost everything in there. There are certain things that's called Kalei HaBishul, and we're choshesh that we don't put them in a Kli Sheni. Certain things get cooked easily. Now, what these things that get cooked easily are is a great mystery. We know that water is not one of them. The Alter Rebbe in Shulchan Aruch, the Lubavitcher Rebbe felt that not only is water not one of the Kalei HaBishul, but also any liquid is not one of the Kalei HaBishul. That means any liquid, according to the Shulchan Aruch Harav, can be put in a Kli Sheni without any problem. So I can put orange juice into, I have hot water. I take the hot water out of the urn directly, now it's in a Kli Sheni, right? My urn is a Kli Rishon. Hot water in the urn is a Kli Sheni, correct? So according to the Shulchan Aruch Harav, I'm allowed to put orange juice in that Kli Sheni, even if orange juice was never cooked before. I can put it in. No problem. Milk, according to Shulchan Aruch Harav, is also going to be considered a item that's definitely not Kalei HaBishul, and you can put it in a Kli Sheni. So according to Shulchan Aruch Harav, not a problem whatsoever to put in a Kli Sheni. Even if you don't hold like the call of the Shulchan Aruch Harav, the Prima Gadim and others disagree. And they assume that when we say water is not Kalei HaBishul, and you can put water in a Kli Sheni, that's only water, but other liquids you can't put in a Kli Sheni. But, still, we are allowed to put milk into a Kli Sheni, because milk was already cooked once, no? It says on the side of the milk that it's pasteurized. Right? That means it was cooked. There's this used to be an old Seymour Rockoff song about pasteurized and homogenized. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Right? So, whatever. So, if the milk is pasteurized, it was already cooked once. Once it's already cooked once, you're allowed to put it in the Kli Sheni for sure. Not a problem. So the milk, you can put the bottle in a Kli Sheni, take the hot water out of the urn, put the milk in there, no problem whatsoever. Is that true? Is that true? Well, first of all, right, that's only true if it's regular milk. What about if it's formula? Formula is plain water that's usually mixed with powder, no? That's what formula is. The water was never cooked, correct? Think you don't use cooked water when you make formula. So if I'm making a formula bottle, so then what? Then for sure I could put in the Kli Sheni. That's just plain water, no? Unless I say, well, maybe now it's a completely different liquid because it's formula, it's not water. And according to the Prima Godim, I shouldn't put in the Kli Sheni. So then I should be worried and put in the Kli Shlishi. Okay, so again, let's go slowly. A milk bottle, no need to use a Kli Shlishi at all. A formula bottle, if you hold like the Alter Rebbe, Kli Sheni. If you hold like the Prima Godim, maybe I could argue to put it in a Kli Shlishi. Okay, fine. Now,
breast milk.
So breast milk has also not been cooked, right? So if you want to warm the breast milk up, according to Shulchan Aruch Harav, Kli Sheni is fine. No problem whatsoever. Right? If you hold like the Prima Godim, so then also you should put it in a Kli Shlishi. Correct. Now, the Mishnah Brura, though, comes up with one wrench in the plan. The wrench is called the Isser of Hatmana on Shabbos, no? Hatmana means that there's a few prohibitions involved in Bishul. There's cooking directly, then there's Shehiya, leaving something on an exposed fire, there's Chazara, taking something off of the fire, putting it back on, then there's the one called Hatmana that we know very little about. We're not exactly sure what Hatmana is, but it means somehow insulating, no? So if I have like a hot water urn, so I'm not supposed to wrap it up with lots of towels to maintain the heat, because that would probably be some Isser of Hatmana involved. Right, that's insulating the food. That's going to be a problem of Hatmana. That's also an Isser on Shabbos.
What about a thermos bottle?
A thermos bottle. So Moshe Feinstein has a chuv about the thermos bottle. He wants to say that a thermos is not considered a problem of Hatmana, because Hatmana means something on top of the regular bottle. The thermos bottle, the whole bottle, is made that way. That is the bottle. So that's not an issue of Hatmana. So the Mishnah Berurah has this interesting idea. It quotes in the Taz here in Siman Reish Nun Ches. Kasvu ha'acharonim. Right? This is on the second side of the page. There are too many sources about Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni, Kli Shlishi. It would take up like 300 pages. We decided not to do that. So the acharonim say, the Mishnah Berurah writes, she'asur likach kli u'betocho mashke sonein. I can't take a vessel which contains some cold liquid, v'letchov oso b'shabes l'kli molei mayim chamin, she'yischamim b'tocho, and I can't put it on Shabbos into a container that has hot water, afilu lo yochol lovo lidei yad soledes bo, even if I'm not going to, it can't come to yad soledes. Yad soledes is the shear of Bishul, which usually we assume is 113 degrees Fahrenheit, which is around the temperature of a bath that's not really hot. Okay, a really hot bath is around 130, no? Yad Soledes is lower than your hot bath. That is the temperature of cooking on Shabbos, Yad Soledes. Now again, when I say Yad Soledes is 113, that's the Chumrah, no? That's what Shlomo Zalman writes in the Shmirah Shabbos, based on the funny Gemara, no? The Gemara says like this. The Gemara says, has a discussion about whether the Beis HaShchita, the place where you shecht an animal, whether that's considered hot or cold. Says Rav Shlomo Zalman, if that's a discussion in the Gemara, obviously that point is right at the threshold. Okay. So what is the temperature of the Beis HaShchita of an animal? Right. So you have to go to animals right when you're shechting them and put a thermometer over there and find out how hot is it. Well, which animal? Oxes have a different temperature than ducks. Apparently a duck has the lowest temperature of the Beis HaShchita of any known animal. Okay? And the temperature of a duck, people actually experimented. The temperature of a duck when you shecht it is 113 degrees Fahrenheit. So that's how we get the number 113. Other poskim say the number is 120. Others say the number is 150, 160. For Yayin Mevushal, we assume that Yad Soledes is 190. No? So there's a big range between 113 and 190. But let's assume 113, Lahachmir. So I'm going to put this bottle with a liquid, with a cold liquid, into hot water in a place where I can't come to Yad Soledes bo. Says the Mishnah Berura, don't do that. Why? Shezehu derech hatmana mamish, kevan shekulo tamun betocho. Because that's actual hatmana, since the entire bottle is encapsulated. So the Mishnah Berura says, do not stick your bottle into hot water, because that's going to be an isser of hatmana. No? You ever heard this one before? This is a little bit different. It's a little strange. So it's strange for a few counts. As a general principle, we assume there's no such thing as hatmana in the Kli Sheni. So we don't know what this Mishnah Berurah is really talking about. The Prima Gadim tries to answer the Mishnah Berurah, and it's a Mishnah Berurah, so it's hard to just dismiss it completely. So therefore, based on this Mishnah Berurah, many people feel that it's better not to heat up your bottles by immersing them into hot water, because you run the risk of hatmana if the bottle be completely encapsulated. Now, of course, this is a big mistake, because the reality is, if you ever tried to put a bottle in hot water, it floats up, right? Because bottles are plastic. Plastic is light. There's also a lot of air in there. It will float up. So we have no idea why it says in a lot of these English books that you should try not to put your hot water...
You have plastic bottles. The glass ones, probably.
Books that came out in the year 2000? I don't know. It's hard to get.
Glass bottles, but glass bottles might float too.
Glass bottles would probably also float, yeah.
I mean, you can still get glass bottles.
So it's hard to know... It's hard to know exactly where this came from, but based on this idea, some people don't like heating their bottles by immersing them because they're worried about hatmana. And even if the bottle floats up, I should say it's not so crazy because, you see, if I have a bottle and the bottle's immersed mostly, and there's a little bit on the top that's exposed, so is that hatmana? Does hatmana have to be completely encapsulated? So the Mishnah Berurah assumes hatmana has to be completely encapsulated. That's what he writes over here. Kevin shekulo tamen betocho. The entire thing is covered over. The Chazon Ish writes that even hatmana b'miktzas is considered hatmana. So if I have something that's mostly covered, but the top is exposed, that's also a problem for the Chazon Ish. This is the old crackpot shaila. Right? The crackpot question of hatmana from years ago was hinging around this question. It's not completely covered. There was a little bit of space on the top. No? The pot sticks up from the case a bit. So, the Chazon Ish is machmir on hatzmana, even if it's not hatzmana bekulo. So, according to the Chazon Ish, how do you heat up a bottle? Right, if you have, again, how many chumras we have over here? A lot, to get to this point. I'm not counting anymore. But, according to the Chazon Ish, what's the best way to heat up a bottle on Shabbos, if you're worried about hatzmana? And it happens that the Chazon Ish himself would probably not be worried about this type of hatzmana. He's worried about hatzmana b'miktzas, but in a different case. So the answer is like this. You do what's called iroi mikli rishon. If I take a hot pot of water, of boiling water, and I pour it over something else, that's iroi. Right? When I pour hot water onto something like making tea in the Mishnah Berurah, right? The Mishnah Berurah gives you this whole long, elaborate discussion of how you make tea. Basically, you take tea leaves and you pour hot water onto it, etc. Right? That's called iroi. That is pouring hot boiling water, which we assume halakhically is mevasho kedei klipa. Right? Iroi cooks it, the outer level gets cooked. So, by a bottle, it's great, no? Because if I want to heat up a bottle, what's the outer level of the bottle? The bottle, the plastic. Does the plastic get cooked? Well, plastic isn't food. By non-food items, what's considered getting cooked? A change of state. If the plastic would go from solid to liquid, yeah, that would be getting cooked. Yeah. I hope you don't do that to your bottle. Right? If you do that to your bottle, you're afgehakt at tzaris. So, the fact is, the best way to heat up your bottle, it's funny, because it's the most chumer form in cooking, but if you're worried about this issue by hatzmana, the best way to heat up your bottle would be with iroi, by pouring the hot water on top of your bottle until the bottle gets hot. Then, some people say, no, iroi doesn't work, because there's a chumra of the Taz in Yoredeya. The Taz says that one iroi only cooks a kedei klipa. But if I do iroi on top of iroi on top of iroi, if I keep on pouring, then the whole thing will get cooked. So if I'm worried about the Taz, maybe I have to be nervous that to heat up the bottle, I have to pour lots of hot water from the urn, right? I'm taking hot water from the urn, putting it on my bottle. So, the more and more I pour, right, maybe it's going to end up cooking through and through. It'll cook through the entire bottle, and the milk inside will get cooked, if I'm worried about that Taz. So it happens that none of us are worried about the Taz. Anyone who has only one sink in their apartment, right, most people in Washington Heights, I think, have only one sink, correct?
Yes.
If you have one sink in your apartment, you're not nervous about the Taz. There's no way. Right, that's where Moshe Feinstein points out his tshuvas. He says, someone asked him, how do people do dishes in New York? You only have one sink. What's going on over here? And sometimes the sink is known to even stuff up. Right? Happens. So he says, well, the sink isn't really treif, because the only part in the sink that's going to be treif is that one pinpoint area where maybe milk and meat hit exactly that same spot. And that area is only kedei klipa, it's a tiny little outer amount, so it doesn't make everything else treif. That's where Rav Moshe says, maybe I'm nervous about the taz, that if I keep on pouring and keep on pouring, the whole sink becomes treif. So Rav Moshe says, no one is worried about the taz. So ultimately, if you're nervous about the taz, so then you shouldn't have one sink. That's really... Okay, so to summarize, I hope I didn't confuse people too much. How do you heat up bottles on Shabbos? Basically, you have a lot of good options. Okay, if it's regular milk, the milk is pasteurized, do whatever you want. You want to pour hot water on it, pour hot water on it. You put in a klisheni, put in a klisheni, klishlishi, no problem whatsoever. You're nervous about the hatsmana issue? Probably no need to be nervous. The bottle won't become completely encapsulated. According to the Chazon Ish, okay, maybe there's a little room for concern. If it's breast milk or something that was not cooked before, so then klisheni is a little questionable because it gets involved in the machlokas between the Chazon Ish. It gets involved in the machlokas between, the Shulchan Aruch Harav and the Prima Godim. So you should use a klishlishi. Kli Shlishi is fine, according to Rav Moshe Feinstein. Once you're in the Kli Shlishi, you could cook anything you want. Now, the Chazon Ish happens to be machmir about that also. Chazon Ish says that he looked through Shas and there's no source for Kli Shlishi. Okay. But the fact is, I think the minhag of almost everyone in America is that we heat up everything in the Kli Shlishi. You make tea on Shabbos, you take a tea bag, right? You take water from the urn, that's your Kli Shlishi. Pour it into the next cup, that's your Kli Shlishi. Put your tea bag in, that's how you make tea with all the chumras. No problem whatsoever. Unless you're worried about the Chazon Ish. Fine. So that is the topic about warming bottles. I want to talk about... Yes? Sure.
Related. I heard somewhere that you can't defrost milk and use it on Shabbos. Like there's a problem with defrosting.
So there is an issue of nolad, of changing of state. That is a chumrah. It is a chumrah of the kobol. The Ramah quotes the chumrah, but it's only a chumrah. In other words, me'ikar din is perfectly fine. Also, the issue with defrosting that's really a problem is only if I'm going to do something physical to defrost it. I'm going to be active. If I just take something out of the freezer and I leave it there, it's not a problem of changing state, right? Because I'm not being active in the process. So the fact is you could take it out of the freezer. There might be an issue of muktzah. If I have a milk supply that I was intending on using next Wednesday and it happens that my kid was really, really hungry over Shabbos and went through all of the milk, so then there might be an issue of muktzah over there. But honestly, letzorech katan, right? We said last week, the Isser of Muktzah won't apply. No? The Isserim Derabbanan can be relaxed. You should probably try to do Ayudei Shinoi, take it out of the freezer in some atypical way, but that would be fine for a katan, yeah.
Yeah, but can you defrost it by sticking in a bowl of warm water? There would be a klishlishi, because you just take it out of the freezer.
I think that might be a little more active, which you should try to avoid. Again, it's a chumrah. It's a chumrah. Right, a drabon is mutter mitzracha katan, but drabonans in terms of no little more chum, you should try to avoid it if possible. If not, it's fine. Yeah. I mean, it should be fine. Is that clear?
Yeah. The way we usually do it is we take the freezer back and we stick it in a bowl of warm water.
Right.
Because if you just take it out of the freezer and let it sit on the counter,
it'll take a week and a half. Yeah. Okay, right. So I think that. I think that's true. It might be better if you can try to avoid the shiloh altogether and have like some liquid milk for Shabbos if you have the refrigerator space. If you don't, so you can't. Fine. Preparing food for kids on Shabbos. Turn to the front side of the page. So the malacha that we'll discuss now is tochein, which I call grinding and mashing. The Gemara talks about Haiman de Purim Silka, a person who cuts up a certain beet on Shabbos, so that's Chayiv Chatos, that's the real malacha of Tochein. Shulchan Aruch says, HaMechate Chayerek Dak Dak is Chayiv Mishem Tochein. If I cut a vegetable very fine, so that is Tochein. What exactly cutting a vegetable very fine is, nobody knows. Right? How fine is very fine? No idea. The Bir Halacha over here already quotes from the Sefer Yireyim, in the third line, of this Bir Halacha, third line of the second source. It says, the Kfar Kosa B'Sefer Yireyim L'Harib Elazar V'Mitz T'Shira Dakusan Lo No Dalonu. We don't know how fine is fine. The Tzemach Tzedek, the third Lubavitcher Rebbe, I'm officially Lubavitch, by the way. So the Tzemach Tzedek, the third Lubavitcher Rebbe, quotes that he thinks there's a problem of dak-dak if I have something that is cut very fine in only one dimension. Let's say I take carrots and I make it into strips, very fine strips, according to the Tzemach Tzedek, that's considered dak-dak. Others say, no, that would be dak. Dak-dak would mean it has to be very fine in two dimensions. Nobody knows exactly what dak-dak is when you say you don't cut a vegetable very fine. So, we're not exactly sure of what that means. Then it says in Shulchan Aruch that Hu Adin, it's Asar Lachtuch Grogoros V'Charuvim. You also can't cut up Grogoros. What are Grogoros? Grogoros are like figs. Now, the Chazon Ish in an essay says like this. He says, one second, figs don't usually get cut up. Cutting is something I use a knife for. If I want to cut a fig, I don't cut a fig. What I do is I crush a fig. I mash a fig. So the Chazon Ish says, well, you see from here that mashing is also a malacha of tochein on Shabbos. Point one. Point two, says the Chazon Ish, point two is later on in Shulchan Aruch, right? And if you look in the same sif, he says, first of all, he says that to grind up bread is not a problem because the bread was already ground once, and ain't tochein achar tochein. When something is ground once, there's no problem of grinding it again. And then he writes, v'kol zeh, two lines, three lines into this quote in the Shulchan Aruch, v'kol zeh lo mari ela b'chotech u'meniach, avo im la'ochlo miyad hakol shari. Right? Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Rashba, that the malach of grinding is only if I'm grinding something in order to put it aside. If I'm going to grind it and eat it right away, it's all mutter. Okay? So says the Chazon Ish, he has this wild and crazy idea. He says, well, you know what? Maybe that idea, that to grind something in order to eat it right away, that that's permitted, that's only true about regular grinding. When I take my knife and I, you know, you remember like the Shih Tzu knives that they used to advertise like on late night television? Right? So you take your knife, you grind it up, so that's going to be the, then we'll have the heter if I grind it for use right away. But if I crush something, says the Chazon Ish, crushing is the paradigmatic form of tochein, and therefore it won't help even if I'm going to use it right away. And consequently, the Chazon Ish says that the case that comes up all the time is if you want to grind up a banana for your kid. My daughter loves bananas. She calls them nanas, right? If you want to grind up a banana for your kid, says the Chazon Ish, that's going to be the real issur of tochein. Because how do you grind a banana? You don't grind a banana. You mash a banana. You squish it. Squishing it, there's no heter, even if you're going to use it right away. So what you do, says the Chazon Ish, is you have to use shinuyim. You have to grind it, mash it, squash it, whatever, in the atypical sort of way. Which means, he says, you use the back of a spoon or the back of a fork. Now that is what Rav Moshe asks. Rav Moshe says, one second. I never would squash a banana with the cupped part of a spoon because it won't work well. Right?
It won't. Anyway, it's for a kid, so what's
the... What?
It's for a cotton anyway, so what's the
problem? It's for a cotton anyway, but this might... The Chazon Ish has assumed this is a doraisa. And even for a cotton, we try to avoid it. The Chazon Ish says, this is the classical case of the Malach of Tochein, is squashing your banana or avocado. Those are two examples. If you make guacamole, no?
Potato mix. Use a potato mix.
A potato mix.
Masher.
A potato masher.
Old-fashioned hand thing.
Old-fashioned hand potato masher, right. So the Chazon Ish would say that's very bad, because that's a keli that's meant for grinding, and that's a terrible, awful thing. Definitely do not do that. If you want to do it, you have to, on Shabbos, during the week it's fine, on Shabbos, you should use the back of a spoon or the back of a fork. Frech Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach in the footnote in the Shmir Shabbos Kehilchosot, chapter Vav, note 20, and Rav Moshe Feinstein in one of his tshuvas, actually I gave you the tshuva over here, they both asked They say, 1 second, the back of a spoon is much less of a problem than the back of a spoon is much more of a problem than the front of a spoon because it's just not a shino. Here, look in the Rav Moshe. In the second side of the page, the second paragraph that begins, V'hinei gam achazonish. Gam achazonish matir sham b'shinoi. The chazonish permits it if you use a shinoi. V'ashinoi kasav shehu b'kata de sakina o kata de kaf umazleg. The shinoi is if you use the back of a knife or the back of a fork or spoon. Ulech ora kaf atzmo v'hakata de kaf shoven le'inyin koshi hashchika. It would seem that the spoon itself and the back of the spoon are both the same level of difficulty when it comes to crushing. Ukimdumani, it appears to me, shebekaf shehu ogo mitachtav kashi yosel l'shchok bo mehakata. The Rav Moshe is correct here, no? It's more difficult to use the cupped part of the spoon than the back of the spoon. Umay taima machshav hakata l'shinoi. So why would it be a shinoi?
Kata means the back of the spoon.
Yeah, kata is the handle.
The handle, right?
Yeah, the handle.
Oh, the handle.
The handle, not the back of the spoon.
What's this? There's the whole cup part of the spoon. Whether I use the front part or the back of this part, that's the same.
The
but to use the back, the handle
the
part.
Handle,
of the
handle. That's different than the back of the spoon.
The curved part of the spoon also won't work very well to crush or mash.
How about leaving the skin on it and just mashing with your hands?
Yeah.
How about using a cup bar?
Yeah, okay, so Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach actually has that suggestion. He says, if you want to be machmir for the Chazon Ish, you know what to do? Rav Shlomo Zalman has this idea. He says like this. He says, 1 second. First of all, this idea that a banana is the paradigmatic form of grinding it's gross, I know it's gross, I'm sorry. But to squash a banana is like the classical type of grinding. So Rav Shlomo Zalman says, 1 second, I don't understand it. You know, what you're doing with the banana is you're not really grinding. You're softening the banana. So let's say I soften the banana when it's still encased in its peel. So he says that would not be a problem whatsoever. And that's what he recommends in one of the footnotes. He says, if you want to be machmir for the Chazon Ish, so I have an eitzah, take the banana and, do you remember like the old Midas Mufflers commercials? Right? Like you're banging on it. Like have a lot of fun. And right? Uh-huh. Well, I think it's a generational thing. I apologize.
Oh, I can go for the record. Remember when there was a dot of orange dye in the margarine?
Fine. So the point is that the Reb Shlomo Zalman says that maybe you should just do it when it's in the banana peel, and then you'll take the peel off and the whole banana will slide out. Alternatively, Rabbi Ribiat in his Sefer, in his English Hilchos Shabbos book, he recommends that maybe you could mash a banana by using a cup. You take a banana, you peel it, just take a cup and bang down. That will mash the banana very easily. That's not a normal way of mashing. Rav Moshe Feinstein thinks his Chazon Ish is totally off base. He says, 1 second, even if I assume that crushing is a form of grinding, but that's talking about the case in Shulchan is crushing grogros. When I crush figs. When I crush figs, basically what happens is the figs end up separating into component parts. If I crush a banana, it doesn't separate into component parts. It just becomes banana paste. Right? It's like jelly when you crush a banana completely. So Moshe says this is not grinding whatsoever. Bechalal, it has nothing to do with the melacha of grinding. And therefore, Rav Moshe says, Me'ikar, then you could grind it the normal way. You could do it with the front of a fork. If you want to be machmir for the Chazon Ish, it's not the biggest deal, so you use the back of the fork. By the back, I mean the handle of the fork. Use the handle of the fork to grind the banana, and that way you'll be machmir, but Me'ikar Hadin, it's fine. Rav Ben Zion Abba Shaul, who was a Rosh Hashiva and a Posek in Yerushalayim, he passed away around 12 years ago, 13 years ago. So Rav Ben Zion Abba Shaul and his Tshuvos, Or Letzion, he has an interesting idea. He says that, you know what? He thinks grinding a banana with the teeth of a fork also is a shinoi. Because how do people grind today? You grind with a grinder. You don't grind with forks. It's big chiddush. So therefore, if I grind with a grinder normally, so even the teeth of the fork is going to be a shinoi, and that's going to be okay. So effectively, there's a whole variety variety of positions. This is not a difficult chumrah. Right? To measure bananas using the handle of the fork is really not so difficult. It's probably not a bad idea. Since the Chazon Ish assumes that's potentially a d'oraisa, it's not a bad idea to be machmir that way. Okay, yeah. So we assume that this isn't really nolad because it's a solid that became a softer solid. It's not really becoming pureed. No? I'll bring you a raya. What bracha do you make on one of these ground bananas?
Or any kind of
banana. Hadamah, right? If it's pureed, if it's banana juice, you'd make a shahakal. No?
If you're the
Chazon Ish,
though, you make
Hadamah. No, not necessarily, because
the Chazon...
No, that's only because orange juice is... Oranges are grown to make orange juice. Bananas are not grown to make banana juice. No one grows a banana to make banana juice. Gotta get out of the basement tomorrow. Okay? Even the Chazon Ish doesn't conclude that orange juice is Hadamah. He entertains it as a possibility. He says that the Rashba would assume that way, but his conclusion is that orange juice is not going to be Hadamah, then you should make a Shahako like the Minog of people. No Orthodox Jew alive today makes a Hadamah on orange juice.
I know one.
Yeah.
He told me he received that sacrament.
Find it very interesting. That doesn't sound right to me. Doesn't sound right to me. Okay, next. So, babies go through different stages in their eating career. The first stage, they're only taking bottles. And then they graduate to cereal. So, the first cereal is rice cereal, right? And then the second cereal is usually barley, then oats. Or is it the other way? It's been a year for me. I don't remember anymore. I think barley then oats, correct? Maybe it's oats then barley? I don't know, whatever it is. So, there is one halachic issue that comes up once babies graduate to cereal, which is that the tsoa of children is not a problem at all until the children are eating one of the five grains. You could say kriyishma, you could daven in the presence of their diaper is not a problem whatsoever. Once they start eating grains, so then the tzoa becomes a problem. So that is a halachically significant moment when your child graduates to the cereals. Fine. The question, though, of making baby cereals on Shabbos, the question of kneading, is a real question. Lush is also one of these malachos that there's a ton of sources in Shulchan Aruch, and rather than give you many pages of sources, I'll just try to explain outside. So, the Gemara tells us that there are different types of mixtures. There's what we call Belila Ava and Belila Raka. A Belila Raka is like pancake batter, no? A Belila Raka pours. It might pour slowly, but it pours from one container to another. A Belila Ava is dough rather than batter. It's like a paste. Lush min haTorah, the melacha of kneading, is only if I have a paste-like substance. If it is a batter-like consistency, if it's the consistency of something that will pour from one container to the other, it is not a problem whatsoever. That is not the melacha of kneading. Fine. It happens that we make gezeiras on a batter-like substance that we try to be machmir and say maybe it resembles lush a little bit. So we permit you to make a batter-like substance only if you employ shinuyim, which means that you make it in an atypical way. If I usually put in the solid before the liquid, on Shabbos I should reverse it and put the liquid in before the solid. And I should also stir it in an atypical way. How I stir in an atypical way, so the Gemara speaks about stirring Shesi and Erev, which is just crisscross motions. There's also the possibility of being Ma'are Mikli L'Kli, that you just pour it. Right, instead of stirring it, you just pour it from utensil to utensil. And there's also a possibility of doing it biyad, which means that you stir it with your hand rather than with a spoon or the like. The Chazon Ish actually is machmir here also. Surprise, surprise. The Chazon Ish says that when we say that the shinui of lush is only if I use my hand, not if I use a kli, the Chazon Ish says even if I put a glove on my hand to stir the mixture, that's also considered a kli. Fine. So, what we have is, if I want to make cereal for children on Shabbos, you should try to make the cereal a loose consistency. Because once it's a loose consistency, the consistency that will pour from container to container, there's no d'oraisa whatsoever involved. And then, honestly, we permit it with some sort of shinuyim. Generally, we try to employ two different shinuyim over here. We try to both add the liquid at a different time than it's usually added, either before or after the solid, depending on when I usually do it. And also one of the shinuyim in terms of mixing it. There's actually a Chazon Ish who's mekel here. That's worth $1 million. The Chazon Ish says that one shinui is enough by a bli laraka. So all I need to do is either add it in a different sort of way or stir it in a different sort of way. I don't need both. Let's say your children, like most kids, I think, don't like the very loose cereals. I think when they're very, very young, the cereal is extremely loose, no? It's basically breast milk with a few grains of rice. But as they get older, they want the baby cereal to have a little more of a consistency. So then you get into questions of a blila ava. So you should try to avoid doing that on Shabbos. Because a blila ava is potentially a d'oraisa. Especially because there's some of these cereals that you see like instant oatmeal. When you pour the hot water in the instant oatmeal, it clumps up right in a second, no? You don't have to stir it. It kind of, even before you stir it, you just pour the water in and it already becomes...
Is that a bishul? Forget about the
meat. Oh, it might. Sometimes I'm using a klishlishi. I solved the bishul problem the other way. But can I make instant oatmeal on Shabbos?
Instant
no.
Oatmeal has been cooked already.
Well, instant oatmeal has been... It could be it's been cooked already.
That's why it's pre-cooked.
Okay. Fine, but... Okay. So we could solve the bishul problems in a number of ways. But the fact is that there's a real issue of lush here, of kneading. And the issue of lush, even though usually it's not considered kneading until you actually knead it, until you mix it together, but something that really clumps up right when you pour the liquid in. So Reb Moshe has a tshuva based on the Sifin Shulchan Aruch and Simin Shin Mem, Sif Yud Beis, that it sounds like these type of items are lush right away. So if you have something that consistency on Shabbos, you should not make it. You should try to make it before Shabbos. I used to try to make my kids' baby cereal before Shabbos. Because I was nervous that the type of consistency that they liked was even more than the regular blila ava. It's more than the dough. It was the second you add the liquid to the baby cereal, it would become very hard. So I'd make baby cereal before Shabbos, and then I'd put it in the refrigerator. Then I'd have to find some way of heating it up on Shabbos, so I'd put it on top of the cholent pot. Not a big deal, right? You put it on top, it's not going to become yatzar lettuce bowl. It's just going to come to the temperature. It really was not that difficult. It happens that my kids hated baby cereal. After like 1 week or so, they were just off baby cereal and started eating candy. But we tried. But if something is a blila ava, if it's a thicker mixture, so then you should really use two different shinuyim to make it. Like we said earlier, you should mix the food in... You should mix the liquid and the solid in an atypical sort of order. And also you should mix it with a... You should mix it either with your finger or you should mix it just with crisscross motions without really going around and around. There's one other shinui that's mentioned in Shulchan Aruch, which is that instead of mixing with a spoon, I mix it with like the handle of a spoon, which is also a fine shinui in many cases. Although this English book by Rabbi Simcha Bunim Cohen, the Children in Halacha book, he says that that type of shinui will only work in the Bli Laraka, won't work in the Bli La'ava, so he's not into it. I didn't see other poskim mentioning that. So
the issue of lush is to make the actual dough?
says the machlokas in Tanoim, between Rebbe and Rebbe Yossi Rebbe Yehuda, about whether Isser Losh is to make the dough, or the Isser Losh is to mix the liquid and the solid. In other words, is the malacha, does the malacha begin when I pour it, or does the malacha only begin when I mix it? So that's the machlokas in Maseches Challah, and the machlokas, machlokas elsewhere. The end of Shabbos. Fine. So, this is, are there any other questions in turn that in food preparation I didn't get to? Like, what I thought of was issues in tochein and issues in lush. I want, yeah.
Is it considered tochein, or are there any fears of that if you're just cutting up food very small for a baby to pick up and eat?
Right, so just cutting up food very small for a baby to eat. So that's dak. The Rashba is makel, that you're allowed to cut something up right before you feed it to... So that should be Heter Gomer, according to Shulchan Aruch. The Mishnah Brura, according to the Rama, I should say, the Mishnah Brura quotes that you should try to be Machmir to cut it up not as finely as you cut it up during the week, to cut the pieces slightly bigger. Now, you got to be very careful, because you cut things very small for babies for a reason, and you don't want to leave it bigger. If you want to be machmir for the Mishnah Berurah, just be very careful. Not to use pieces that are too big, because you don't want the Chas V'Shalom to end up with any problems. So that's the issue in grinding. And that issue comes up making salad all the time, even for adults. That's like a question of making salad. So making salad, so you should cut up the pieces slightly bigger than you do during the week, even if you're doing it right away. That's what the Mishnah Berurah recommends. You have that Mishnah Berurah on the first side of the page.
Right away,
Shulchan Aruch says when you come home from Shul. And you can't do it now. Okay, when I come home from Shul very late, my wife is preparing food long before. I think when you leave Shul, normal time, when you're preparing for the meal. Most people don't prepare for the meal at 9 a.m. when lunch is going to start at noon. That would be a problem. That's the expression in Shulchan Aruch. Like 2 hours is considered a problem. That's the same issue for Borer, right? When we permit Borer Miyad, like to set the table, to you have the silverware, it's all mixed up, and you want to set the table. So what's considered a Miyad? What's considered an altar? So generally we assume Samach L'Seuda, close to the meal. What that means exactly, these are difficult judgment calls sometimes. Fine. I want to talk for a few minutes just about the use of thermometers on Shabbos. Kids sometimes get sick. Adults also get sick sometimes, but somehow I find that kids get sick more often than adults do. So, can you take a kid's temperature on Shabbos? Yes. Why? So it says in Shulchan Aruch that there's an issur to measure on Shabbos. Medida is usur. Right? But if you'll see this source on the second side of the page, towards the bottom, Mutar limdod b'Shabbos medida shel mitzvah, kigon limdod im yesh b'mikvah arba'im sa'ah, that you have your mikvah measurer man, and he goes and checks, or she goes and checks whether the mikvah has 40 sa'ah, v'limdod ezar mishahu chole, and to measure the belt of someone who's sick. Right? Apparently there was some type of refuah that they put like some healing belts on people, and the belt had to fit. So to measure that belt is considered a medida of mitzvah, because the belt only worked if it fit you properly. So you see that doing something for refuah to heal a person is considered medida shel mitzvah. So certainly it's mutter to take temperature on Shabbos, at least because of medida shel mitzvah. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach entertains an idea in his, not in the Shmir Shabbos, in his Sefer Ma'ori Eish, which is a book that he wrote about electricity. When he was 18 years old, his mother needed a hearing aid. So he decided to look into the issues of electricity, and then he felt that the Chazon Ish was dead wrong, so he wrote letters to the Chazon Ish, and the Chazon Ish wrote him back. Eventually he published it as a book called Ma'ori Eish. So, in that book, in the Ma'ori Eish, Rav Shlomo Zalman, in the middle, just goes off on a tangent. He talks about measuring, and he talks about taking temperature, taking it on Shabbos. So Rav Shlomo Zalman says that the Isser Medida, to measure on Shabbos, is an Isser because, you know what, measuring is usually part of the process of selling things. But measuring temperature to take a thermometer is nothing to do with selling anything. So therefore, he wants to suggest that maybe taking temperature is heter gomer. It's perfectly permitted on Shabbos. You don't even need this heter of medidah on tzarach mitzvah. Even if you're not sick, you just want to take your temperature, it's fine. This issue comes up actually in fertility treatments often. Women sometimes have to take their temperature in order to find out when they're ovulating. So the question is, are you considered a chol at that point or not? So Rav Shechter assumes that you are a chola. Others question that maybe you're not a chola. Because there's nothing, you're not sick in any way. It's hard to assume why you would not be a chola, but in some of the literature, people assume maybe you're not a chola, but according to Rav Shlomo Zalman, certainly you could take your temperature because temperature has nothing to do with measuring for purposes of selling items, so it's not a problem. So probably, but it might be too far removed from the mitzvah. That's the concern. It's so hard to understand why anyone would possibly answer this. Like, I don't get it, but there's a whole literature on this topic. What? We're talking about mercury thermometers for now. The type of thermometers that they don't let you sell anymore because they're supposed to be dangerous.
And there are non-mercury
right. So we're talking about a thermometer, either the mercury, a thermometer that just has a line that goes up and you see the temperature. Talk about electric thermometers in a few minutes. Now, in the old mercury thermometers, the question was, you'd have to shake the thermometer down. So, are you allowed to do that? So, the Shevet Halevi, Rav Wozner, you know Rav Wozner from Ar Erev, so his father, so Rav Wozner, and in the Tshuvas, Shevet Halevi, Chelek Gimel, Simon Chav Ches, he wants to say that that's a melacha de oraisa of Makeh B'Patish. Right, what's Makeh B'Patish? Makeh B'Patish usually is that I put the finishing touches on something. And, okay, put the finishing touches on something. That's Makeh B'Patish. The Chaya Adam writes, and I give you the Chaya Adam over here, that to wind a wristwatch on Shabbos, you know the old type of watches that you'd have to wind them? Says the Chaya Adam, Zug HaMekashkesh L'Shos HaYidei Mishkolo Shekor Mzeger, it's called a clock, right? You're allowed to set up Erev Shabbos, etc. But, he writes later on, it's going to be an av malacha of metakin mon. It's going to be makir patish and isur to oraisa to wind your watch on Shabbos. That's what he says. Why is it a malacha to oraisa? Because the watch is broken. It can't be used when it's not wound. I wind it up. I make it usable. So when something goes from being not usable to usable, so that's a malacha to oraisa of metakin mon. The Mishnah Berurah quotes as Chaya Adam. Based on this, if Rav Wozner, my thermometer is not usable when the mercury line is high up. So therefore, when I shake it down, I'm making it usable. Malacha d'oraisa, makeh b'patish, don't shake your thermometer down. The Tzitz Eliezer writes in the Tshuva in Chelek Yud Aleph, he says, I got this Tshuva from Rabbi Wozner, I don't know what he's talking about. Makeh B'Patish on the level of the Oraisa, he says it's Derech Tashmisha. The way it normally works, right, is that you any item that's meant a door, it's meant to open and to close, right? That's its normal use. Am I going to say it's Bona? Because now it's open, and then if I would bang nails in, right, that would be building a wall. That's also in Shabbos. So I close it, I lock it. How is it permitted to lock a door in Shabbos? Isn't that bona? It says, no, it's meant to open and close. Anything that's meant to do that activity is heter gomer. So says the Tzitz Eliezer, there's no problem whatsoever with shaking down your thermometer on Shabbos. That's what Rav Shlomo Zalman says. Also, so shaking down the thermometer is okay, even according to the Chaya Adam. We'll explain why in a minute. Yeah. So Rav Shlomo Zalman asks, the wristwatch is also meant to wind, and then right, it stops, and you wind it again. It's not broken. Right? So why do we assume that wristwatches are a problem? So Rav Shlomo Zalman works very hard on this question, and in his Tshuvas Mincha Shlomo and Simen Tes, he suggests, this is very important because this relates to the whole issue of electricity. The Shlomo Zalman suggests that, you know what? He thinks the problem with the wristwatch, according to the Chayei Adam, is that the wristwatch is really broken. You see, I would prefer that my watch tells time the entire time, that it never stops. I prefer it never stops. The fact that it stops means on a certain level the watch is broken.
So then could you wind it if it hadn't yet stopped?
So therefore I can wind the watch if it hasn't yet stopped. Yeah, absolutely. Now the Mishnah Berurah actually in the Shaar HaTzion wants to be machmir on that. We don't fully understand why. It says you shouldn't even wind the watch while it's going. But Rav Shlomo Zalman says it's fine to wind the watch while it's going. So now, why is that? Because the watch, when it's still going, not a problem. But when it stops, then the watch is broken. The thermometer, that's the way, it's supposed, you don't want the thermometer to always keep on taking temperature. Right? The idea is that only when you want to use it, so therefore that's its normal usage, therefore it's heter gomer, that's what Shlomo Zalman said. Now why is that important for taking care of children on Shabbos? It's important for two issues I want to discuss, which are very similar to the watch, and they are baby swings and these little wind-up toys. No? So, if you look at many of the Sfarim, they say, Rav Moshe Feinstein is quoted as saying in the Muktzah book, there's Rabbi Badner has a book called Muktzah. So there on page 26, he quotes from Rav Moshe Feinstein that there is a malacha, maybe a malacha de oraisa, to use one of these, you know, like the Energizer bunnies, one of these like little wind-up toys. That's mamish going to be usher because it's like the Chayei Adam's watch. So Rav Shlomo Zalman says, one second, no. Right? The toy is meant that you don't want the toy going the whole time. The Energizer bunny is very annoying because he's always going. Right? You want a toy that actually will stop. And the kids play with the toy when it stops at some point. They don't always want the toy to be going. So therefore, that's its intended usage. And we have this principle that whatever the intended usage is going to be mutter on Shabbos. Baby swings. Baby swings also, you don't want the swing to always keep on going. You want it to stop, because usually the kid goes in the swing and falls asleep after a while. Right? And so if the swing is meant to stop, so according to Rav Shlomo Zalman, there is no problem whatsoever in using baby swings on Shabbos and in using these wind-up toys. However, there's a whole other approach here to the Chayei Adam and the wristwatch. The Chazon Ish says that he thinks the issue with the Chayei Adam is that you're taking the watch and you're making it go mimaves l'chayim. Because the watch is dead, then you wind it, and then the second hand starts moving. So it went from death to life. Whatever goes from death to life, says the Chazon Ish, is not malach of makeh bepatish, but it's a malach of boneh. You're building. You're building a live item. That's what the Chazon Ish says. Therefore, the Chazon Ish says electricity is forbidden on Shabbos. Based on this Chayei Adam about wristwatches. Why? Because I am taking items and I am bringing them to life. Right? Now suddenly I create a circuit and my fan starts going around and around and around. It went from death to life. That's an Isser, potentially an Isser de Oraisa of Bona on Shabbos according to the Chazon Ish. Yeah.
Seems to me with it, the watch isn't dead until it's actually not able to work at all. It's not that you're bringing the watch back to life, you're waking the watch up.
So, as long as, the Chazon Ish says, as long as it's not moving, to my eye, it looks dead. I look at a watch and the hand isn't moving. I don't know if it's broken. It's not broken. Now I'm bringing it to life. Tchiyas HaMesim happened, right? The watch is now alive. Boom, right? Therefore, it's a malacha boon, and that's what the Chazon Ish says. In Shmiras Shabbos Kehilchasa 2.0, volume 3, right? There was the first Shmiras Shabbos, then the second one that had three volumes. The third volume is like notes on the first two volumes. So Shlomo Zalman writes that I permitted using these baby swings and the wind-up toys, but you should know, according to the Chazon Ish, he wants to say that using a baby swing is going to be forbidden on Shabbos. Now, I'm talking about the old type of wind-up baby swings. You could still buy them on eBay. We were successful to buy these old type of baby swings.
What's the new one?
The new ones are like the battery-operated ones. We'll talk about those in a minute. But the So that's what Rishlom Zalman says, according to the Chazon Ish, it should be a problem. And therefore, according to Chazon Ish, you shouldn't... Now, it happens that most of the Rosh Yeshiva and Wayu, or my Rebbeim, they don't pass like this Chazon Ish by electricity. We assume that electricity is not in the Siddur Reis on Shabbos. If electricity would be in the Siddur Reis on Shabbos, we're really stuck. We assume electricity, unless I'm turning on an incandescent bulb, electricity is probably in the Siddur Rabbanan on Shabbos. Therefore, if it's a really hot day, you could ask a guy to turn on the air conditioner for you. That is shvus to shvus b'makom mitzvah. I'm asking a guy to do an Siddur Rabbanan for the mitzvah of enjoying Shabbos. No? That's fine. We assume electricity is Rabbanan, it's not Doraisa. That's how Rabbi Schechter paskins, that's everyone in YU paskins this way. It's pretty standard. So if we assume against the Chazon Ish, so then you are perfectly fine to use your wind-up toys and your wind-up baby swings. Rabbi Daniel Neustadt used to write halacha articles in the newspaper, the Yated Neman. So in one of his articles in the Yated Neman, so I think they came out as a book now called like the Monthly Halacha Discussion, the Weekly Halacha Discussion, something like that. So he has an essay about baby swings and wind-up toys. So he has the following suggestion. When it comes to the baby swing, at least, right, if the concern for the Chazon Ish is that goes mimavis l'chayim, so as long as the swing is moving a teeny bit, you could wind it because it's not dead yet. Right? Just don't allow the swing to stop completely. That's his argument. And he wants to say also, we probably don't totally like the Chazon Ish, so he recommends winding your baby swings on Shabbos with a shinoi to use your left hand instead of your right hand. Now, today it's hard to get these type of old wind-up baby swings, although we were successful getting one on eBay, but the newer swings, the battery-operated ones, should be better from this perspective, because you don't have to wind them, you don't have to get involved in the whole conversation about the Chaya Adam and the wristwatches, whatever, but it does have another issue called Hashma'as Kol. No? They all make noise. They have, like, lots of music. Do they?
You can turn it off.
So you have to turn it off before Shabbos. Right. So that's the basic idea. If you have...
The swing itself,
that's not considered Hashma'as Kol. The little bit of noise that you can't hear in a different room.
You leave it on before Shabbos, you just put the kid in.
So that's basically the story with the baby swings and with the toys. Just one last issue in terms of thermometers I didn't mention is that we were talking about the old mercury thermometers. Today there's no such thing. So today, there are different types of thermometers out there. Most thermometers are electric thermometers, which display the numbers when you put it in your mouth for a few minutes. That's a few seconds. That's the basic idea.
That's okay or not?
So that's what we'll talk about.
Okay.
So the electric thermometers, the pashtus is, all of the books say that don't use electric thermometers on Shabbos. That's what it says in all these English books. I think it's really a mistake. And I'll tell you why. Because if you remember, we said earlier that for a chola she'ein bo sakana, right? We had the machlokas between the Shulchan Aruch HaRav and the Mishnah Brura. For a chola she'ein bo sakana, so I'm allowed to tell a goy to do a malacha, a Jew can do a malacha with a shinui. The Mishnah Brura assumes that's only doing a malacha d'rabbanan with a shinui. And the Shulchan Aruch HaRav says even a malacha d'oraisa you could do with a shinui. Okay? For a chol she'ein bo sakana. If I need to take my temperature on Shabbos, odds are I am a chol she'ein bo sakana. In most cases. At least a chol she'ein bo sakana. Right? We're taking the temperature to find out. Like you're going to call the doctor and, well, okay, the doctor will say, well, does the child have fever? Well, I don't know. Well, you don't sound so smart in that situation.
If you're calling, you should know.
So the point is that you're at least a cholish embo sakana. For cholish embo sakana, you can do a drabbanon for sure. Are you the shinoi? Maybe even the dorais or the shinoi. Electricity and these electric thermometers. We assume against the Chazon Ish. We assume it's only a drabbanon. So even the point of the Mishnah Brura, I turn it on with the shinoi. Don't turn it on the normal way. Right? Use a different finger. Okay. Use a different finger. Don't turn it on with this finger, turn off your pinky. That's how you should turn on thermometers on Shabbos.
We're turning it off.
But, so when they go off by themselves, usually.
So that assumes it's the Rabbanan.
Even if it's d'oraisa, the Shulchan Aruch Harav says, so then I could do a d'oraisa with the shinui for chol hashem b'sakana. So I do not know why the English svarim are machmir about these electric thermometers. It seems to me that it should be fine. Yeah. So it's funny because Rabbi Cohen himself in his Chosen Halacha book, he passes like the Shulchan Aruch Harav, and he still says don't use electric thermometers. But so it's talking about a case that you're not really sick, you're not a cholish embol sakana. I don't think it's so likely. I don't think it's so likely that you're taking someone's temperature if they're not a cholish embol sakana. Any other questions? Yeah, Danny. So, is it ksiva with these electric thermometers? So, the issue is, I think it's meant to go on and off. It's definitely a ksiva she'ina shel kayama, which is also d'rabbanan. There's no d'oraisa here. Right? I don't think there's any d'oraisa. Yeah, it's a good point about the ksiva, but it's only it's ksiva d'rabbanan.
Is it beeping that's fast caller? That's also.
The thermometers make noise?
Sometimes they make a little beep.
A little beep is not a problem. Hashmas kol, we assume, is the type of noise that Moshe says that someone hears on the outside. That's a question of setting an alarm on Shabbos. Is that hashmas kol? So it depends. If they hear it outside, it's hashmas kol. If they won't hear it outside, right? I mean, I don't hear anything. That's a different issue. Yeah.
So the halachos of the thermometers would be no different for a child than for an adult.
I think so. Because, I mean, by a child, if I think we'd have a lower threshold of what's considered a chole she'en bo sakana, for an adult also, I'm a chole she'en bo sakana. Every time I need to take my temperature, I'm probably a chole she'en bo sakana. That's what I would assume. Okay, so thank you all for coming.
Thank you.